This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. There's a growing schism in the United Methodist Church. The organization made headlines earlier this year after the General Conference passed a plan that bars gay marriage and gay clergy. That plan was met with sharp criticism by the LGBTQ community and its allies, and now the church's Western North Carolina Conference has also taken a stand against the changes. The so-called traditional plan is set to take effect in January. So what does this mean for church members, and especially for LGBTQ clergy? Blue Ridge Public Radio reporter Lily Knepp was at the Western North Carolina Methodist Conference, and she joins us now for an update. Welcome back, Lily.
Hey, Anita. How are you?
Good. So tell us what the traditional plan is.
So the traditional plan is really the most recent petition by the United Methodist Church's annual conference to try to answer this question of where the church falls on the LGBTQ community being clergy and also same-sex marriage. Right now, it's very clear in the United Methodist Book of Discipline that those things are not allowed, but there are gay clergy and there are people who perform same-sex weddings.
So why is this coming up now if the standing ruling within the UMC is that homosexuality isn't allowed explicitly?
This is something that just kind of has been pushed down. The annual conference is only every 4 years. The annual conference is the meeting of the entire International United Methodist Church, and that's when they all get together. And so every year this kind of comes up and gets tabled because it's very controversial. People on both sides feel that they don't want to make a ruling on this, or that the ruling has already been set up, or that they want it changed entirely. And so this has just been the final stand that has really made a lot of people in the United Methodist Church, especially in the U.S., kind of take a stand.
So this traditional plan doubles down. They say clergy can't marry LGBTQ couples. Regional conferences can't ordain self-avowed LGBTQ clergy. What are the other punishments, and what happens to clergy who don't abide by these rules?
Exactly. So one of the ways people have described it to me is that it really adds teeth to those rules that were already in place. So now if there is if someone performs a same-sex wedding on the first offense, if somebody brings it up, they will be suspended for a year without pay. On the second offense, that would be the second wedding that they would perform, they will be terminated and will not be allowed to be a clergy member anymore. So that's really stepping up what was happening to people who were being brought up for these charges of performing same-sex weddings.
So this all came down at this general conference in February. It's a meeting of international church members and leaders. So who goes to this conference, and how did the vote fall along various demographic lines?
So the people who go to the annual conference are elected at the lower conferences. So the Western North Carolina conference that I went to a couple weeks ago, that is where they choose the delegates who are then going to go to that annual conference that the next one is happening in 2020. So these people had been chosen as clergy and lay delegates from their churches, and everybody gets a certain number of delegates depending on their size of the region. So a big part of what people talked about after the traditional plan passed was just the increasing size of the global church. So the American church has actually diminished in size over the last few years, and the global church has grown. And so other countries are more conservative when it comes to things like same-sex marriage. And so that was sort of the party line that people like to refer to when they're talking about why the traditional plan passed.
And American Methodists, according to most analysis, two-thirds of them say homosexuality should be accepted. So this is kind of falling more along lines of, you know, a growing denomination in more conservative areas. Is that right?
Exactly. People in the U.S., and that's really what is going to come up at this next annual conference, is will the United Methodist Church be able to continue to be a global church?
So take us to Western North Carolina and the Western North Carolina Conference. You covered that recently, and it's significant because of both its size and its diversity. Tell us about this group and what you heard at the conference.
Exactly. It's the second largest conference in the country, which I was surprised by here in Western North Carolina. But the conference itself actually kind of spans all the way from Greensboro to the tip of Western North Carolina. So it has big metropolitan areas like Greensboro and Charlotte, as well as these smaller rural areas. So you really get that mixture of the urban-rural population, and the people I spoke with really see it as sort of a microcosm of who is in the Methodist Church. So they think that you really can look to this this conference to be able to figure out what might happen at the next general conference.
You spoke with a number of LGBTQ attendees, one of them, Laity Mackenzie Dillingham. She's from Haywood Street Congregation in Asheville. And she talked about the impact that decisions like these could potentially have on young people in the community. Let's take a listen.
That's just one notch in the post for a kid that may be thinking about ending their life over something that's just very controversial in the United States and, of course, in the South more so. So it's important to make sure that our places of worship are welcoming and around the tables, the conversations are positive ones for young people.
So that's Mackenzie Dillingham. She's been a Laity for 6 years. She identifies as a lesbian. She was at this conference in Western North Carolina, where Blue Ridge Public Radio reporter Lily Knepp was reporting. So what else did you hear from LGBTQ Methodists at the conference, Lily? Do people feel similarly to Mackenzie?
Yeah, so Mackenzie has really been speaking out. I had talked to her before about how important it is for LGBTQ youth to feel supported in the church. The LGBTQ youth really have a higher suicide rate and depression rate. It's almost 5 times that of other teenagers. And so she really wants to stick with the church for that reason. And that sort of is the crux of the issue for a lot of people in the community, in the LGBTQ community that I spoke with. They were really hurt by the passage of the traditional plan. This is something that they've been hearing for most of their lives, whether they've grown up into the church or come into it later. They felt attacked by, you know, the people who are supposed to be their church family, but they would like to all still remain together. But at this point, people kind of are pretty skeptical that that's going to happen.
So there also were some people, obviously, who were in support of the traditional plan. And you spoke with one of them, Talbot Davis. He's been a pastor of a megachurch in Charlotte for the past 20 years. He's part of the evangelical movement. And let's hear his thoughts about the traditional plan.
Yes, so it does not change anything that we have taught regarding human sexuality ever, but because of the widespread public disobedience to what we teach, to what it means to be United Methodist, that's why the traditional plan enacted the kind of mandatory punishments that are involved, because the punishments that were already in place were being so widely ignored.
That's Charlotte Megachurch leader Talbot Davis. I'm talking with Lily Knepp about the Western North Carolina United Methodist Church Conference. So at this conference, they passed a petition to reverse the traditional plan. They voted for 40 delegates to send to the general conference who were all progressive. What's the significance of these moves?
So these moves really kind of explain that this passage of the traditional plan is potentially not the end of this conversation. People really thought that after the traditional plan passed and then was going to go through the judicial council, which is the Methodist Supreme Court, to be ruled mostly constitutional, that might be the end of it. And now it really seems like people across the country at the Western North Carolina Conference, also at the North Carolina Conference, and around the country elected these pretty progressive, very progressive delegates who are definitely in opposition to the traditional plan. So they're going to be the ones at the table negotiating for what the Methodist Church is going to look like and how they're going to deal with it as these petitions are brought back up now that the traditional plan will come into place in January of 2020, and then the next annual conference is in May of 2020.
So on the one hand, we have these regional conferences meeting, people are voting, expressing various positions. But on the other hand, we have individual churches who are saying, you know what, we are going to leave. We don't really want to be part of this active debate right now, or we disagree with the direction the church is going. So tell us about this movement to separate, what it's playing out there.
Yeah, so you're really hearing from people on all sides, and there are people within the congregations themselves who are leaving, who don't feel supported by the Methodist Church. One of the most recent moves is 7 churches in Mississippi left the denomination. One of the things that was a part of the traditional plan was a move to allow churches to be able to disaffiliate with the Methodist Church with a little bit less sort of stickiness, and to allow them to move out while they're having this conversation. And so those seven churches did leave, and they said it was more because they feel like the Methodist Church isn't focusing enough on the mission of a church because of just arguing so much about this LGBTQ issue. And I heard that from a variety of clergy that I spoke with at the Western North Carolina Conference. They're saying, you know, these divisions and having this discussion and really kind of saying very hateful things about each other is not what the Methodists should be doing, and they should be focusing on kind of what they all feel their mission is.
I only have about 30 seconds, Lily, but I want to quickly hear about another story that you have been covering about concerns about the Cherokee language. Three recognized tribes declared a state of emergency last week. Tell me very briefly about this.
Sure, Anita. So the Cherokee, the tri-council of the three federally recognized tribes came together and declared a state of emergency. So they only have about 2,000 fluent speakers overall across the country. The eastern band of the Cherokee, which is here in western North Carolina, only has 200. So in 2009, they had about 400 speakers, and now it is down to 200, and they are not producing fluent speakers as quickly as the fluent speakers are actually passing away. So it really is an issue, and they are trying to revitalize their language and come together to share resources to do that.
Thank you, Lily. Lily visited the immersion school and has much more about this in her own reporting, which you can find at the Blue Ridge Public Radio website. She's a reporter who covers Western North Carolina for Blue Ridge Public Radio. Thanks so much, Lily.
Thanks, Anita.
Just ahead, we will learn about one of North Carolina's most majestic creatures, the sea turtle. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Anita Rao.